Welcome to Reality TV, the podcast where we cringe watch all the shows we love and love to hate. I'm Jody, and I'll be your inner voice as I break down all the shows we watched together this week. No shame, no regret, just wanting all the reality we can get. Remember to check the show notes for how to find me and the rest of our chosen people. Facebook and Instagram, Welcome to Reality TV, and Twitter at Reality TV Pod. And for bonus episodes, head on over to patreon.com/welcometorealityTV. And now, on with the show. Hey, welcome back. I have a show filled with all the teen moms from around cable land, from MTV to TLC today. And it might be a little harsh and perhaps a bit snoozeworthy on the MTV side because, holy shit, that might have been the most boring episode of Teen Mom OG ever. So prepare yourselves. And on top of all that, it's been one of those days where I'm just having a really, really hard time biting my tongue and being the bigger person. Maybe this is more of a Patreon thing. I don't know. Let's see how I feel after I blow off some steam with some teen moms. So let's head over to MTV and start with Amber. Matt's been at a hotel ever since she threw him out of the house, called him a pussy, and told him to leave. But now they're going to be seeing one another again because they're contracted to go on marriage boot camp out in Los Angeles. So Amber does what any woman who wants to make her ex jealous and is going to be filmed while she's at it does. And that is go see Beth, the Lash Lady. And she's bringing our little majesty, Tanya, her mother. And we find out that Tanya is going to be at marriage boot camp with these two. Confession time, I did not watch the series, but now I'm wishing that I did. So if you watched it, or maybe it hasn't even been out yet, I don't know, tag me on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, give me the rundown. So this was sadly the highlight of Amber's scenes for me because the next time we see her, she is scarfed in an interesting way. I actually think the scarf thing, when your hair pulled back, it could be kind of cute, like that rockabilly thing, but her proportions were off or something. It was just a lot to look at, and I just wanted to reach through the screen and adjust it or something. Christina shows up, or actually I should say Amber showed up at Christina's, and she was kind enough to let Amber in. They're coloring all together, passing notes with Leah. I didn't fully understand or grasp the game that they were playing. Something that reminded me of Operation Snowball in middle school or high school. Did you guys have these? It's like these touchy-feely retreats where you wore like this yarn necklace thing. You exchanged strings. Am I just imagining this? I don't know. Maybe it was just an Illinois thing. Anyway, while they were coloring and spreading all the free love, Leah expresses that she misses spending time with Amber, and that broke my mother effing heart. And it's in these moments that I think Christina gets it, that Leah and Amber need that time together. But then she backtracks when she gets around Gary. Any insight as to what is up with that? Like, is Christina a saint or is she a snake? Fast forward a week later at Gary's house, and he's making plans for another house on his land with the insurance money he's about to make because he's about to set himself and Christina and the house on fire with the grill. It's the 4th of July, and while Amber is away at marriage boot camp, Gary is grilling up disgusting looking burgers. There was just something mealy and smooth and gross looking. And he's telling the world about Amber's new guy that she has set her eyes on. She thinks Gary is going to approve of this new boyfriend because he's legit and he has a verified Twitter account. Is this like a thing? I really, truly don't know. I'm not lying to you. I don't even really know what verified means. I know there's a little check mark or something next to the names, but does that mean you have money or that you're Kardashian or you've made it on Twitter? You're popular? God, I'm so old. Either way, Gary and Christina have concerns because it's appearing to them and kind of to everyone that Amber just kind of jumps from guy to guy. She's got some daddy issues, that's for sure. And she does need constant tending to and attention to make her feel whole, which leads back to this Christina thing. I really do want to like her, but then I feel like she backstabs Amber like she did in this scene, saying that she wishes Amber would just focus on Leah and then she'll find true happiness there. I don't know. I mean, maybe she's not wrong, actually, but maybe it's saying it on camera as Amber's trying to regain custody of Leah for number one. And number two, she's trying to build up or reestablish her reputation in the community, or more Twitterverse, really. And yeah, I mean, doesn't Christina herself have her own skeletons in the closet with her daughter? Does she have custody of her? I know she's not allowed on camera, but someone being in that position, maybe don't be the first one to jump on the bandwagon casting stones. In the end, Gary and Christina bring baby Gertina and Leah to see fireworks, and Christina gets this amazing idea. Grab your planner, open up your iCal. Christina says they should go watch fireworks every year. Wait until she hears that no matter what, they always plan it on July 4th. Whew. How about them Claremont apples? But not so fast. An Amber segment can never come to a close without seeing Amber's favorite producer. And can I whisper, I suspect a former addict herself, Kiki, and David. We've never seen David. He just looks like he's standing in for someone, like he really works in the IT department at MTV. Amber's on her deck, and apparently boot camp didn't go so well. Shocking, right? You mean Dr. Jen didn't fix things in your life like she did for Farrah and Deborah? Well, Amber's finally realized Matt is a pathological liar. He's a weirdo. She broke up with him while they were filming. Kiki actually seems more worried about what Leah's reaction to this breakup is than Amber is. I don't think Leah gives a shit, to be honest, because if she said she loved Matt, it's really only because she probably thought she was supposed to. Because when Gary and Amber talked to her about it, it didn't really seem to upset her. I'm with Leah, actually. I'm more skeptical of Gary's hamburgers than anything Matt was bringing around. So Amber's in a good place. She's talking with old friends again. It's always a sign you were in a bad relationship when you were losing friends. You didn't know it. The drama is gone. The BO and fake Boston accent are gone. The fucking money funnel is gone. And now there's more room for the new baby daddy to make his grand debut. And I cannot fucking wait. Let's see what Farrah's doing. I think we must be in a winter equinox, or there's a new moon, or the sun is in Pisces or some shit, because this is the most calm, rational, and dare I say boring Farrah we've ever seen. This could be MTV's way of threatening her porn career, because I cannot imagine a man alive finding her entertaining or alluring or sexy in any way, shape, or form after her 20 minutes this week. She says that she's traveling internationally, so she's spending time with Sophia before she leaves. Was this traveling to the porn locations that she was fired over? I tried searching her IMDb, but I wasn't sure where she was going, what she was doing, or who she was doing and where. Heyo. I did find that she's currently, I'll put this in quotes, filming a film called The Millennial Mogul. Keep your calendars cleared for that premiere, okay? So in an attempt to spend time with Sophia before this international travel, she wants to spend time with her safely in daylight with security, and they're getting their nails done together because mommy always needs soft heels when she's about to take it up the ass overseas. Hashtag lady boss. So they sit down and Farah puts her sunglasses on so she can avoid Sophia and take a little nap and close her coked out eyes, allegedly. And then she realizes Sophia picked out a glitter polish with marijuana leaves floating in it. Sophia is just Stewie Griffin in the flesh, right? Because she seems to know exactly what that was, and she seemed to know exactly how to squirm her way out of it. I'm just kidding. We find out that while Farah is off to get her vagina molded and filmed for Saudi princes, allegedly, Sophia's going to be staying with Michael and his girlfriend, Amy. What kind of good shit must Michael drug Amy with to have her stick around all these days? Farah would much rather have her father, who she calls by his first name, and his girlfriend, who he likely met at a Radisson hotel bar, than to have Deborah watch her again. Because something happened that last time that Deborah watched Sophia that put Farah over the edge. Am I the only one that's continually lost as to why they are still, after all these years, hot and cold? One season they're all good with an occasional, you know, I hate you, I'm going to stab you. But overall, it's just this general disgust. And then the next season, we have Deborah sleeping with an oversized Papa Smurf and dressing like she is in the Jackson 5 during the I Want You Back tour, looking at hat shops with her token gay hairstylist friend. So Sophia is staying put with the very strict instructions not to play hide and seek. Well, I mean, now I have to know. This is now part of my life. I must know about this hide and seek thing. What could have happened so badly that the game is totally banned? Did she hide in a weird place? Did she run away? Did she make someone hide and then sinisterly waited and never sought them? This needs to evolve into some amazing fan fiction. I will ghostwrite it on behalf of everyone. Who's taken chapter one? I'll take chapter 2 through 10. So while Amy and Michael are preparing to take care of Boo Boo, I mean, enough with the Boo Boo teen moms, Farah is going to get some film time in on how she's a hashtag boss bitch, hashtag entrepreneur. So she's sticking her head in the doors of all the stores that she leases in that strip mall. Okay, sure, Jan. How are these places turning a profit is the real question. Because I have a theory. It's based on nothing. This is purely my opinion, all allegedly. But I wonder if these stores are a front for something. For instance, maybe she performs a service to an investor, and the investor puts money into said businesses. And after doing the books, there's enough money for Farah to take home a profit, a paycheck, clean money. Now, I'm not a CPA, but I have seen a few episodes of Ozark, and my husband does do some traveling to some interesting places in the Middle East. Come on, what am I talking about? None of this makes sense. I'm just a crazy person, so don't listen to me, allegedly. Well, we're still counting down to this damn trip, and I'm already tired of it, and it hasn't even happened. We get a scene of Starburst going batshit crazy senile in Michael's backyard, which has turned into a legit petting zoo. And he tells Farah some basic fatherly advice. Farah, take advantage of this chance. Look over your shoulder. We love you. He tells his daughter, who's done anal on camera for a living, to look over her shoulder. Jesus fucking Christ. So then we have some boring Farah packing. There's a hashtag thanks birth control hat, as if that's the worst and most scandalous thing we've seen from Farah so far. And then she's crying at dinner with Michael and Amy, and Sophia is quietly carving a tally mark into the bottom side of the table. Even I don't know the significance, but one day when we read her manifesto, it'll all make sense. It will all make sense. Finally, we get to the scene of Farah shipping off, and the cameras pan to Sophia, who's all smiles, holding Farah's precious little dog. Again, I don't know why this holds importance, but to me, it's just like watching Lost back in the day. Just take the notes, be observant, listen to the others. It'll all come together one day. Okay, let's move on to Caitlin. We're here, the day I know you were all waiting for. I know all of you were waiting online. A whole 50 of you anxiously awaiting the launch of Tierra Rain retail site. Well, Tyler and Kate are prepared too. They were able to use this day as an excuse to pass Nova off to April again, and Kate says it so that she can pack boxes for all these orders that are going to come in. Well, Nova is like 3 years old, right? They can't pack boxes while Nova's home. Packing boxes with Nova around is easier than making dinner when a kid is there. Are they just completely inept at multitasking, even the simplest damn things? Caitlin seems to be able to snack on her fingers all day while she talks about her pony that she really, really wanted and she was going to play with it every day. So now we're down to launch time. 20 minutes, 19 minutes. Tyler is about to hyperventilate and cry and laugh like he's an audience member in Oprah's Favorite Things. I'm expecting a high-pitched soprano squeal at any moment. And then, crickets. Turns out the site is crashing. It's not working. It can't support whatever the hell they have going on. Didn't they hire an IT person, or am I just assuming that? Because no, I'm not assuming that because they were at Kim's house when she was in her post office uniform and they were having her check out the prototype, right? Now, I'm not tech savvy, but that site that they were using, it looked like a simple WordPress site. So maybe WordPress just isn't built to handle that kind of load. I don't know. Or maybe they just assigned Butch and the little blonde brother that never seems to grow up. They just assigned them to it, like a Minecraft storefront. Well, Tyler is full on fretting like Leo when she forgot her speakings, and Caitlin doesn't seem to care. She just turns to get a refill on her coffee to wash down her fingernail clippings, and an hour goes by. And then 6 hours. And the only thing Tyler can think of is that they just must have underestimated the popularity of their clothing line. And I'm almost scared if that is true. What does that say about our culture if Tierra fucking Rain is selling out? People would rather dress their kids in pleather t-shirts with patches and cheap fringe than swipe their Target Red Card for a classic but cute Cat and Jack romper. You guys, it comes down to this. You gotta vote. I'm deliriously tired, but this is somehow making sense to me. Rock the motherfucking vote. All right, finally, with all the stress from a day without having anything to do because their kid's with their mom and Caitlin has no boxes to pack, Tyler's the one on the phone calling the IT guys to fix it, Caitlin's got to take a break. She's going to go to the stables. You know what? Give me a fucking break. Like, for real. I need a break and a Kit Kat and a real fucking reason why you need a break, Kate. I cannot with her anymore. Now, remember this precious Callie the horse that she bought, the one that she had to buy that she would not just pay for daily rides? Julie the horse trainer calls Kate on her shit immediately. You said you were going to come and you never came. Exactly. Thank you, Julie. Kate says she and Tyler were going to try working for a day, but it didn't work out, so that's why she didn't go. She hasn't even worked yet, and she's stressed. It's interesting to note the fact that Kate is wearing a polyester poncho from the dress barn to the stables. Maybe she thought it had the word barn on the label, so she assumed it was riding wear. And Julie continues standing over her like a hawk. I don't think these barn owners, stable owners, I don't know, I'm not a horse person, whatever you call them, I don't think they trust Kate, and neither do I. So eagle eyes, Julie, eagle eyes. After Caitlin comes home smelling like shit and horses, Tyler updates her that they're finally able to get a bigger server, the site's up and going, it's all good, and they have 50 orders. Oh my God. Caitlin couldn't even count that high on her fingers, even if she hadn't chewed them off. So fast forward to the next day, and as I predicted, Caitlin's packing the orders on the fucking floor of her house. You mean you guys couldn't have gotten a $40 folding table to use? So Nova and the pets are trampling all over the tissue and the clothes. The clothes are all wrinkled. Caitlin clearly doesn't know how to fold, and it's just all wrong. And I promise you, those clothes smell like cigarette smoke and wet animals when they arrive at the customers' homes. But Caitlin says, I feel like presentation is everything. Yeah, just because you printed off a few color photocopies of you and Tyler and throw them in there doesn't mean that people are going to ignore your shitty quality product. So fast forward again, Kate and Tyler are celebrating. It's been one whole week of working and they almost sold out. So they are, you guessed it, taking a break. Taking a break from what? Some of my rage is admittedly that they rented a pontoon boat, and I love a pontoon boat, and I love them even more when Kim and Alcohol are on board. But seriously, these two are some lazy motherfuckers. I told you, I'm in a rage today. All right, let's go on to Macy. I think MTV could just save themselves the location fee in Tennessee and the filming fees. Just film one episode and replay it over and over again because it's just more the same bullshit. I know there's going to come to be a day when I will miss this show, but today's not that day because I need more from Macy in a different storyline. Audge Roloff, hashtag always more me, Macy. Since Father's Day last week, Ryan has been asking to see Bentley. Macy's still uncomfortable with their loosey-goosey arrangement, so she's having her attorney draft up a letter to set certain guidelines that they can just follow from here on out. So now we're at Ryan's lake house. I don't know if I missed something, but this is the first time I'm seeing this place. It looks like a hell of a party house. I just didn't see Ryan at that kind of place. I guess the only place I have ever seen him is at his mommy and daddy's house, and that's probably where he should be. So his friend Randy stops over after his pit stop at the GNC. And he's checking in with Ryan, asking questions that surely the producers and Michaela prepped him for. And Ryan says he's still talking to his counselor and everything, but it's been hard getting through these withdrawals. I'm already concerned, you guys. His eyes look a little bit more shifty than the day Mackenzie picked him up at rehab. And as soon as Mackenzie realizes that it's lights, camera, action down in the driveway, she beelines in for her close-up. Is there anyone out there who is falling for this chick's act? I think Mackenzie is so transparent. She's jealous of Macy, and she loves this teen mom drama and fame. So her role in their relationship is just to fire Ryan up about Macy and Bentley. And she pipes in and says that Bentley wanted to stay with Ryan on Father's Day. And he even smiled and waved out the window and said, "I love you, Daddy." Well, great. Tell us more about your son, Mackenzie. If you have this whole mothering thing down pat and you know how it's supposed to be done, well, let's see it. So over at Macy's friend Keely's house, I think we're supposed to hear that she's pregnant, but I don't. I told you, I'm in a mood. Luis on 90 Day Fiancé would probably assume I have my period, but oh my God, I don't. Leave it at that. Okay, so Keely repeats the line that she's supposed to ask about Ryan, and Macy fills her in, aka really she's filling us in, that she told Ryan to expect that letter from the attorney. And he texted her back, "Well, what is that supposed to mean?" So she's like, "Well, it's a letter about visitation, like I said." But he doesn't feel like he owes her any sort of explanation, any change to the schedule. I'll repeat what I said last week. The worst possible thing Mackenzie could have done was read that stupid letter at the reunion last season. Her doing that, stating that Macy knew about Ryan's problem and Macy didn't do anything about it, Macy didn't tell her, and it's Macy's responsibility to take action if she sees something. Well, she's doing it, Mackenzie. She's telling you, she's doing something about it, she's taking action. Ryan claims Macy won't communicate with him, but Macy and Keely call Mackenzie out on this because Macy said she called, talked to Mackenzie to have Ryan call her back. I'm going to go ahead and believe Macy on this one because she really has no reason to lie. She clearly is texting him huge paragraphs on the phone. She's offering to pay for his drug testing on visitation days. Mackenzie is just a shit stirrer, and she brings way more drama to that little family of theirs than I think Jen and Larry even realize. Now let's head over to Jen and Larry's. They say that they have been doing pretty good since Ryan's been home. Larry can understand Ryan's language when he talks to him on the phone now. And they admit that when he was in rehab, he said 30 days, but wasn't it 21, that they were actually relieved. They felt like they could sleep at night. They knew that he was in a safe place and that he was going to live another day. But now that he's out every day, they're looking for signs. They're cautious. And then here we go with some contradictory statements to that Mackenzie letter. Larry says, "Don't get us wrong. We knew something was wrong, but every time we confronted him, number one, he would argue, and number two, he would leave. We're not stupid or naive. We know the signs. We know what his triggers are now. Bentley and Jen are triggers. Ryan doesn't like if Jen is sad or upset, and to use Bentley, it's a trigger." Okay, I gotta stop there. Seeing his mom sad or upset triggers him. On one hand, that's sweet and it shows empathy, but for a grown man, he's in his late 20s now, right? To have feelings that are so enmeshed with his mother's, that's a result from some childhood and parenting issues. Overbearing, overprotective parents, narcissistic parents raise children who do not own their own feelings, and they become ill-equipped to manage adult feelings, situations, consequences. I know my psychology, and he's clearly showing signs of that. Whether Jen and Larry are aware of that, whether they're seeking counseling, who knows, but they clearly need it themselves. The next scene actually made my husband laugh out loud, and he's just hearing this in the background because Macy and Bentley are shopping, and Macy says, "Bentley, never buy sushi from grocery store." And this is funny because that's 90% of the sushi I eat. I have to disagree with our redheaded girl, as Mackenzie would say. If you have a good grocery store and they have it where they can make it fresh there, it can be pretty good. Am I the only one that doesn't scoff at it? I mean, I'm not talking like a whole raw fish fillet, but a California roll or some Philly rolls, I'm down. Well, my favorite scene of the whole episode was right here at the end with Ryan. And mostly because it shows how full of shit Mackenzie is. Ryan decides to call an attorney to ask about the legality of Macy's request to set up a more strict visitation schedule. So he calls the attorney on speaker and explains how, you know, his bitch of a baby mama has been giving him every weekend for the last 8 years and it's been fine. And then this, you know, little thing happened where he went to rehab and now she wants to set up a schedule and he's only seen him 5 minutes. And fucking Mackenzie is sitting next to him, like nodding her head, just feeding into Ryan's anger, which I'm sure is so good for his sobriety, right? So the attorney asks him what was his drug of choice, and then we hear it straight from Ryan's mouth: heroin. But what Ryan really wants to know is if what Macy is doing in keeping Bentley from him right now is legal. So the mystery attorney says, well, it's legal, bit of a rotten thing to do. And Mackenzie's still nodding along. Maybe she's just trying to strengthen her jawline. I don't know. Who knows? But then the attorney drops the advice neither of these two were prepared for, and I was living for it. He says, you need to have a judge who has faith in you, and you need to make sure, I mean, I assume you can pass a drug screen. And then Ryan's just silent. And he says, because I've never seen a judge give parenting time to someone who can't pass a drug screen. Oh, and isn't that funny? Suddenly, Mackenzie stops her obnoxious nodding, and she has a look of knowing on her face. She and Ryan both know he is not going to pass that thing. I hope I'm wrong, but let's just say I'm right. Wouldn't Mackenzie and Ryan have been high-fiving or saying right on if he truly was clean? He's getting a Susie Orman denied from me. Let's transition to TLC's Unexpected. Dare I say this show is better than Teen Mom now? I am fully on board, and again, thank you to those of you who suggested I watch it. Let's begin with Lexis. Since last week, Lexis has been adjusting to life at home with newborn Scarlett. She says, since it's Saturday, my mom said she'll watch Scarlett. Ugh, to have had that option as an adult mom, like you just get the weekends off from being a mom. Yes, I'm jealous. I didn't have a Kelsey of my own to take my weekend shifts. But we have Lexis's only friends, Brielle and Hunter, here. And they're over to talk about how badly Shaden sucks. I really wish that she would have called some of us over because I think we really could have given her some good advice. And I probably would have brought some black market Retin-A and some boxer briefs for Shaden. So win-win for all of us. Remember 2 weeks ago when Shaden and Lexis told us that they had the best relationship of anyone they know? Well, that's all gone to shit because Lexis is reading all the texts between the both of them. Gee, wonder why you only have two friends left. Shaden is leaving what Lexis calls guilt trip texts. He's totally baffled why Kelsey doesn't like him. I don't know what I did to make her not like me. Well, for starters, Shaden, you were helping her 13-year-old daughter sneak out at 3 a.m. on Christmas. Then you decided to have a baby with her. And then you moved yourself in and started leaving your shit all over the floor. And you're a disrespectful asshole who can't even take care of himself, let alone a baby. You still confused? Then we find out even more about what happens behind Kelsey's closed front door. Shaden uses really hurtful language to Lexis, and he's threatening to break up with her and take Scarlett. But then he apologizes, and he knows he's wrong, so it's all okay. He just needs to think before he speaks. Lexis, unfortunately, is just too young and naive to realize that's the exact thing Shaden will never be capable of doing. That's like saying, I can work hard enough and I can run a sub-6-minute mile. It's not physically possible for me. I'm a slow runner and Shaden is an innate asshole. Not gonna change. From what Lexis is saying, it sounds like this pacifier thing is a real trigger for Shaden. He gets annoyed because Scarlett spits it out and he doesn't want her to have a pacifier. It's like he knows pacifiers were created specifically for this reason, right? Babies like to suck on them. She will eventually break the habit. I know as a mom of a kid who had a pacifier until she was almost 3, it does. It sucks. Everyone tells you, oh, it's going to be easy. They're not going to walk down the aisle with a pacifier. They're not going to be in kindergarten with a pacifier. But when you're in it, you can't see the forest for the trees. Moms out there who have kids with pacifiers, I promise you, I'm going to be one of those assholes that says the same thing that pissed me off. There will come a day when they will break the habit. I told my daughter that the zookeepers called and the baby monkey that was born at the zoo needed her passies. So we went to the zoo, left her pacifiers on a ledge, blew kisses to the baby monkey, walked away. I'm not going to lie, I definitely ran back there, grabbed them, put them in my bag just in case. She didn't know that. And then the mommy monkeys told her she could get a stuffed animal. Went home, she tossed and turned for a little bit, took a nap, and that was the end of it. Like, she didn't need it to soothe herself. She gave me a run for my money. But anyway, hang in there, moms. Do what works for you until it doesn't. Just hang in there. So back to why Shaden sucks. Oh, pacifier humor. Kelsey comes home and she's asking what time Shaden left last night. And we learn that, oh, he didn't ever actually leave. He spent the night. And Kelsey and I lose our goddamn minds. The fact that this asshole knew he wasn't supposed to spend the night in our house, I mean, Kelsey's house, and that Lexis knowingly broke the rules too. And you know what? Good for Kelsey for being just as upset with Lexis. We like Kelsey, right? Like, is there intel that I don't know about her that is going to change my mind, that why I shouldn't like her? Because so far I'm loving her. Well, she tells Lexis that basically it's time to buck up, be a mom now. It's not about pleasing Shaden. It's about her daughter and making sure that the home she's raising her newborn in is calm and happy, stress-free, with a happy mother, not a mom who is worried about Shaden all the time. I think it's hard for Lexis to take her mom's advice, even though Kelsey really did experience this exact same thing. It's Lexis just seeing her mom as a mom, not as a person with feelings. I think kids at this age just aren't able to comprehend that their parents were actually real people and had real lives and did fun things and had hard times before they came around. But Lexis is a teenager and she just thinks Kelsey doesn't comfort her anymore. You know, big meanie, all they do is talk about Shaden. Again, it's a teenager just wanting their parents to fix the situation, but also keep it the same at the same time. I want to see a Kelsey versus Shaden takedown where Kelsey just tells him off so quickly that Shaden's stupid head just spins. I cannot fucking stand him. All right, moving on to 16-year-old Lily. Lily is basically our Nicole from 90 Day Fiancé, right? We need to start a support group, maybe a secret Facebook page for the moms of reality TV teen young women. And Kim and Nicole's mom, is it Bobby from 90 Day Fiancé? They can be co-presidents. Lily thinks that ever since James gave her that promise, not promise, appreciation, you just wanted this ring, not me ring, things have been pretty good between them. Kim is cautiously optimistic because she thinks James is at least trying to show that he cares. I think Kim is giving him too much credit. I think James just lucked out that he saw this ring on his way out of Kohl's and didn't realize how much heat it would take off his shoulders from Lily, and he just hit the jackpot. Kim also thinks the fact that Lily's belly is getting bigger and the baby's growing and moving, the reality's setting in, and this little baby is actually happening. And then Lily adds to the side, she kicks a lot. You guys, this girl, she's the kind of girl I think would do really well in a women's prison. Hear me out. She's so clueless and a little, maybe she doesn't read books with words. I just think I could see her in prison. She thinks it's a summer camp. She has art class and she can eat with her friends at lunch and they have a nice little salon where you can get cornrows and make makeup like eyeliner from pencil shavings and duct tape. She would be the happiest little camper in the pod. Well, now James, I'm still a little confused by. I think he's more street smart slightly than Lily, but he's on the same end of the spectrum, as we'll discuss later. The producers asked them what kind of parents they think they'll be. And you can tell this is the first time they've ever actually talked about it, because they look at each other and they start talking about picking out clothes for the baby. That James thinks parenting, quote, will just happen when it's happening. We'll just figure it out. Like, if the baby wants to wear something and they disagree, oh, that's fine. But if it's like not agreeable, then we'll figure it out. Oh, okay, got it. Totally clear on that. Mm-hmm. Well, now we're at the pool party and Lily's pretty with it, smart, articulate brother is talking to her mom, Kim. He thinks it's weird to see his little sister, little Lily, pregnant. To him, she's just this little teenager. And he asks his mom what she thinks of James and this promise ring. Very surprising to me, Kim thinks the ring is sweet and any sort of commitment from James is a start, right? Everything starts with a promise, shows he's committed. I thought that was pretty profound and I hadn't thought about it that way, but maybe Kim is right and I guess time will tell. Then we get to the second best part of the episode. If you watched it, you already know what the best part was. Lily's brother says it'll be strange to see Lily holding a baby. And then her very own mother says, I don't like leaving her alone with the dogs, let alone a baby. I mean, oh my God, that might be the funniest fucking thing I've heard a teen mom's mom say in a long time. And it's because it's so accurate. And her own mom is calling her out for being kind of slow. Amazing. All right, so now we're at the shack. And James's mom and sisters are there enjoying burgers and homemade pastries. And I love that James's mom isn't afraid to get down with that chocolate cupcake on national TV. That a girl. So they start talking about the impending birth. And James's sister, who's had a baby, is asking if Lily can take the pain if she's planning on having an epidural. Here we go, you guys. This is so good. And James is like deer in the headlights. And he's like, is that like the shot? Contraction. What's a contraction? Oh, my God. So now you're admitting you're not an expert on childbirth, huh? Maybe sticking around for that class wouldn't have been so bad, huh, James? We can all take comfort in knowing Kim got her view of karma in action watching that scene on TV, right? James says that stuff like epidurals and contractions doesn't really matter, though, because the labor stuff is Lily's responsibility. And then Lily butts in to add that James better be there to comfort her, especially because she thinks the baby has his head that's shaped like a peanut, which I'm not quite sure how that works. And then James tells her that she has a big forehead. Again, this is the falling in love honeymoon phase. Yikes. So the lesson continues for James at the shack, which in all honesty would be the best place to have childbirth classes for new parents. Hold a phone. This is a TM Jody moment. Childbirth classes at a good burger place, like a Five Guys, the shack, whatever. It's going to attract the hungry moms, right? It's going to attract the bored dads. They'd rather that than some office or hospital. Let's say you get a fry and a milkshake while you're talking and sitting there. You could do your swaddling still. I don't know. I mean, I would go. I'm past that stage in life, but I might go just like find a teenager who wants me to help them get a free shake out of it. All right. So anyway, they ask James if he knows that he's got to have the car seat installed or they're not going to let him leave the hospital. And he's truly stunned. His eyeballs are popping out of his head. And then in a moment of rare reality TV gold, James's sister asks if they plan to circumcise their son. And James says, "Circumcise? What's that?" How the hell does he not know this? And in the middle of the shack, with customers eating their peanut brittle sundaes, his sister yells at him, "When they cut the skin off your penis, the foreskin." And James responds, "Foreskin? That's a disease?" Holy fuck. I went to Catholic school and never had to talk with my parents, and somehow even I knew what the basic concept was in middle school. This guy has been holding on to the subject of this area of study in his hands every day of his life, and he doesn't know. So his mom and his sister are laughing at him and surprised, but they're not as stunned as I would have thought or I would have been. Because I got to tell you, if that were my brother or my son or my husband, I would never, ever let them live that down. There would be daily phone calls, texts, emails, leaving shit on their car to remind them of how stupid they are. But then his mom and his sister come bringing around to, "Well, that's why you're in the predicament that you're in, because you skipped health class." No, I have to disagree with that one. It's not a health teacher's fault he's having a baby with someone. There's a lot of other factors that go into it. I like James's mom, I do, but she kind of has a laissez-faire attitude. Like I said, kids are going to do what they're going to do. They do what they want to do. I don't necessarily agree with that, because if you make it impossible for them to do whatever they want to do, they won't do it. I'm sure this is easier said than done, and I don't have teenagers yet, so maybe karma's going to be coming my way in about, 6-7 years. All right, our last girl, Michaela. Like I said last week, I don't want to see, nor do I care about Shannon's giant baby. Not the storyline I'm interested in. Don't care. We got Grandma Cindy, Tiny Tim, Shannon, Michaela, and Kaylin. They're all sitting around the table, and they're talking about who's going to be in the delivery room. Kaylin wants his mom to be in there if Shannon and Cindy get to be in there. That's Michaela's grandma and mom. Giving birth is a very vulnerable thing. I didn't even want my husband to see my hoo-ha, so I can see where a teenage girl doesn't want a whole audience in there while she's spread eagle and exposed. And even just to be able to experience the moment on your own with who you want there, how you want it, I don't have a problem with that. Last week, Grandma Cindy was kind of taking Shannon's side in this feud between Shannon and Kaylin's mom, Shelly. But this week, I got to give it to Cindy for trying to tell Shannon to zip it. And I got to give it to Kaylin, because I think it takes a lot of guts to stand up to three adults and say, "I don't want to be put in the middle here. Shelly's still my mom. If you have an issue with her, I'm the kid. Take it up with her. This is between the grown-ups." But Shannon just cannot help herself. She can't bite her tongue. And she responds, I got put into it. I don't want to be in it. Oh, bullshit, Shannon. You called up Shelly not once but twice to stir shit up. Shannon wants to spin it like, oh, I was just trying to make it better, but Shelly's the one that started saying crap. Yeah, you were really trying to make it better when you were acting like a bratty seventh grader at the baby shower and screaming at the park. So Cindy once again tries to calmly explain to Shannon, what I'm telling you, Shannon, is that Shelly has every right to be there in the waiting room, which she does, and Shannon has to be smart. Because just as quickly as Michaela is turning on Shelly, she can turn on Shannon too. So Cindy continues that Shannon is trying to be a mother now, but she doesn't take other people's feelings into consideration. This is Shannon. She tries to make everything about her when that's not. She likes to stir shit up. 100% her parents are not strangers to Shannon's manipulation. They had to raise the girl. And then the mature, oh, I've changed, that's in the past, judge me on the present, Shannon says, but Shelly's a bitch. You fucking bitch. Can you imagine if Shelly said that to Michaela about her? She would lose her goddamn mind and take it out on her eyebrows with some more overarching plucking. Once again, Kalen shows his inner maturity and braveness at that round table of doom with, that's my mom you're talking about. Good boy. I hope my son sticks up for me someday like that. At one point, Shannon tries to pull a pity party guilt trip thing. And admittedly, this is a trigger for me. You know, we all have family issues that we bring into watching these shows, which is why we choose our villains and our favorites. And Shannon says about her mom, Cindy, and Tiny Tim to Michaela, no, they like you more than they ever liked me. What the fuck? How old are you? She is such a selfish, overgrown child. So fast forward, and now we're coming down to Michaela having this baby. Cindy's telling her to massage her nipples. You know, I get it. You stimulate contractions. It gets things moving. But I would freak out, too, if my grandma said the word nipples, let alone that I should massage them. So Michaela calls Kalen, tells him that she's heading into the hospital, but unfortunately, he's stuck at work. He can't get there now, but he's going to zoom over there as soon as he can. I feel like they kind of edited this to make it seem like he didn't care, like he was just taking his time. But I have a feeling it was more like, you know, labor can take hours, especially when it's your first. So I don't know. Maybe go check yourself in. It takes a good hour or two, and then I'll meet you over there. At least that's what I want to think. So Tiny Tim is in the backseat with Michaela on the way to the hospital, helping her through contractions as if he has any fucking clue what to do or what they feel like. But now they're in the hospital room, and Michaela's starting to have some of those stronger contractions. Kalen and Shelly get there, and now Kalen is sitting on her bedside. Admittedly, he's my favorite. He wasn't making it about him like stupid Shaylin. He was right next to her, and he didn't even cringe or get grossed out as Michaela starts farting and peeing all over herself. It's pretty mature for a 16-year-old boy to say, you know, her body's going through a lot, she can't help it. That grossed me out, and I have given birth 4 times. I never experienced that farting, peeing thing like she did because, I don't know, maybe I have quick labors. I mean, I was induced. I go get that Pitocin drip, get that epidural in, get that catheter in there, which is the best fucking thing ever. It's the first time in 9 months you don't have to get up out of your bed or chair to go pee every 10 minutes. So done, sold, first thing I wanted every time I went in to give birth. Well, we get a scene with Michaela telling us about her labor after the fact. So she's on the couch and she's wearing a wig, I'm guessing for continuity, because she looked like that chick that was on that TLC limited series brother husbands or something. You know which one I'm talking about? It's on TLC Go right now. Go check it out. I don't know if they have any plans to bring that back. It looks like it's kind of at a standstill. So now Michaela is in the throes of labor, and she is starting to get nauseous, says like she feels she's going to throw up. And then stupid Shannon scoots up on her and is like, oh yeah, I had a throw up too. I'm just saying, you might need to. You want me to get something for you to throw up, throw up, throw up, throw up? Shut the fuck up. The last thing you want someone to do when you feel like you have to throw up is talk about throwing up. What is wrong with you? God, like, this isn't something to start a bond with your daughter over. Just move over and be quiet. So we end up with the crew of Shelly and her sister and Tiny Tim in the waiting room listening to everything going on in the delivery room on speakerphone. And we're left with a moment when the baby is coming out and the heart rate is dropping. Thankfully, we know everything ends up okay because we see future scenes with a healthy baby. Now, in the last week or two, Michaela has taken to her YouTube page. She's accusing my queen Shelly of spreading false rumors about her and the baby and stuff. So apparently, Michaela has this very active YouTube page and she makes money off of that. She's got a car saying thank you, so I'm guessing it's ads and promotions. I don't know. I'm a newbie. So if you can follow along and you can look past the very teenager quality and the content of the video, she's got the hair flipping, the scrunchie on her wrist. If you can look all past that, she's saying that she and Kaylin broke up because he cheated on her. So because of that, he and Shelly can see Timmy, which wasn't the baby's name supposed to be Carter or Caleb or something. I'm guessing this is like his revenge new name, Timmy, after the grandpa. So if they want to see the baby, they have to come to her grandparents' house under their supervision because that's what she, as Timmy's mother, is comfortable with. Okay, so obviously I don't know the whole story. My opinion, just from hearing her side on it, I haven't seen what she was talking about with Shelly's. Yes, Michaela is the mom, but Kaylin is the dad. Michaela picked him, Michaela chose him. And whether they are playing house or not, he's the baby's dad. He has just as much right to that baby as she does. And until Kaylin proves that he's dangerous or unable to make rational decisions, he should be able to take his son for a few hours and bond. That relationship is important too. I trust Shelly and Kaylin with the baby more than I trust Shannon with the baby. And again, you chose to make a baby and you wanted this family with Kaylin. So Michaela, you trusted in them enough then. You thought Shelly did a good enough job raising Kaylin to be a good dad. You said it with your own words. So I would assume Shelly is safe enough to hold your baby outside the confines of Cindy's living room. I just think her rant on this YouTube show more of her immaturity than anything else. That's all I got from it. You know, using your kid and as a pawn and a punishment for Kaylin, it's not a good look and it's not a good choice in the long run. Next week, we get to see how Lily handles labor, and I'm excited to see James's reaction when he learns where babies come from. Thanks again for sticking around. I'll be back on Patreon this week talking about my own labor and deliveries as I start to share my experiences as a surrogate. That's at patreon.com/welcometorealityTV. And in reality TV recaps, I'll have Bravo Stripped, Top Chef, and I'll have to see what else. So check out the show notes for all my social media links. And don't forget to subscribe, rate, and leave a review if you could ever be so kind. Talk to you later. Bye.